So we're reading today from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Chapter 5, The Activities of Sakshi Gopal. And we'll cover verses from 10 to 12, and 12 is on the board. So, text 10. Formerly, at Vidyanagar in South India, there were two brahmanas who made a long tour to see different places of pilgrimage. First of all, they visited Gaya, then Kashi, then Prayag. Finally, with great pleasure, they came to Mathura. And then we come to today's verse, 12. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. After reaching Mathura, they started visiting the different forests of Vrindavan and came to Govardhan Hill. They visited all 12 forests, vanas, and at last came to the town of Vrindavan. Purport. The 5 forests situated on the eastern side of the river Yamuna are Bhadra, Bilva, Loha, Bhandira, and Mahavan. The 7 forests situated on the western side of the Yamuna are Madhu, Tala, Kumuda, Bahula, Kamya, Kadira, and Vrindavan. After visiting all these forests, these pilgrims went to a place known as Pancha Kroshi Vrindavan. Out of the 12 forests, the Vrindavan forest extends from the town of Vrindavan up to Nandagram and Varshana, a distance of 32 miles, within which the Pancha Kroshi Vrindavan town is situated. Srila Prabhupada ki. So we're being taken on a wonderful yatra here by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his disciples. And actually this is a story that's related, being related to Mahaprabhu, about the Sakshi Gopal pastime. So of course this pastime begins with these two brahmanas, and one older brahmana and one younger brahmana. And they embark on a travel, on a yatra. And this is really the start of the whole pastime that everyone knows and is so famous, about Sakshi Gopal and the witness. Well, I'm sure that will develop over the next few weeks. But here it's interesting that we get to see what devotees would do in the past, brahmanas, how they would, one of the important aspects of their life, and that is going on pilgrimage. So visiting the holy places obviously is very important. We know that it's recommended in the Nectar of Devotion and in so many other places, that by going on yatra to visit the places of the Lord, we perform a type of pada sevanam, one of the processes of devotional service, that we actually walk, we serve the lotus feet of the Lord. We also use our own feet to walk. So it's interesting. So serving the lotus feet of the Lord is essentially what one does when one visits a holy place. I remember one famous quote from Bhakti Marg Swami once, who would travel across Canada. He's famous for it. He said, half of our body is made of legs. So we should walk. So it's clearly designed for a lot of walking. So we do that, but it's not so much about our legs, because when we go to the holy places, we serve the lotus feet of the Lord, who resides there in his different forms. And Vrindavan, of course, is historically known as the place of Krishna, with so many temples. Different numbers are given, 5,000 temples. And during Mahaprabhu's time, Vrindavan would have looked quite different to the way it does today. And of course, when Mahaprabhu goes there, there are temples standing there which are no longer available. In fact, it was Mahaprabhu who asked his disciples, the Goswamis and others, to excavate the holy places, to build temples, etc. And now those structures, the ones that are still there, are pretty much the oldest structures you see in Vrindavan now. So in Mahaprabhu's time, what was there largely doesn't exist, at least physically, to our material senses. The places are there, many of the deities are there. Some of the deities are very, very old, established by Vajranabha. But of course, they were sent to Jaipur, some of them, for safekeeping. We might touch on that in a little while. But essentially, these two brahmanas are going on pilgrimage, and they're traveling through all these places. So they started off at Vidyanagar in South India, quite some distance away. And then they went to Gaya, Kashi, important places, and then Prayag. And then they came to Mathura. And Mathura is, of course, in today it can be called the town of Mathura. There's also the district of Mathura, which is bigger, and which can include the whole Vrindavan area and that whole zone. So often when we use terminology and we describe places, it can mean different things depending on what we say. For example, Vrindavan is, today it's a town. It's a town. We also refer to the whole place as Vrindavan. Vrindavan, of course, is also a forest within that whole region, that whole area. One of the 12 forests as mentioned here, Mahavan, Bandira, Loha, Bilva, Bhadra. And so they wanted to visit all of these places. So this is like a blueprint for how we travel and how we go on yatra. We visit the different places that are places where the Lord has performed his pastimes. That is, of course, why that whole area is very, very famous. But also, we visit the places that other saintly persons have also visited. Because that gives us an indicator. It gives us something to follow. Often when we go to the holy places, what we see with our eyes is not the full picture. Especially initially when we go, we might be shocked at the different physical sights that are presented to us, maybe even the smells. The sights, the smells, the noises. And so it can be a little difficult. So we have on the one hand, we have recommendations from Srila Narottam Das Thakur, for example, who says that we should not visit holy places in this day and age. Because unfortunately, if we go to visit holy places, we may observe behavior of the residents, which is somewhat confusing, let's say. And so it may actually disturb our faith rather than increase it. So that is one advice. It's more of a warning that when we go to a holy place, we are supposed to go to take advice from the senior advanced devotees, those basis, you know, the basis, the Vraja basis, the Dham basis who live there. But we may also be distracted by other things that go on. So I don't know about you, but every time I go to Vrindavan or a different place, there's yet a new road, another concrete structure, another diversion, another whole shopping area, precinct. It's everywhere. It's in all the places. Because after all, these are living places. They're not just museums. They're places where people also have to live. And what they do is they live according to the way people live in today's world. And they also facilitate all of those, i.e. us, who go there with our different needs. So when we all turn up en masse to places of pilgrimage, then it is inevitable that large concrete structures will spring up to satisfy our needs for accommodation, luxury, food, security, all of those things. So it's one of these cycles whereby each time you go to a place, it looks completely different. So definitely, it can be a little difficult to uncover the real mood of the place. So one of the recommendations, as I mentioned, was that we follow in the footsteps of the advanced devotees who go to these places. Because they go to certain places, they know certain devotees there. They give us a sort of a blueprint for how we conduct a yatra. And so that protects us somewhat, because it gives us an idea of what to do on yatra, what not to do, where to go, where not to go. One of the very important things also on a yatra is to beg the mercy of the protector of the dham. In every dham there is a protector, Kshetrapal, who looks after the dham. Typically Lord Shiva. He serves this special role of looking after the dham. So in Vrindavan you have Gopeshwar Mahadev, who is Lord Shiva, who appears in that special form of the gopi, or he is forced to take that form in order to enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Because no one with a male body is allowed to see Radha and Krishna's pastimes. So Lord Shiva had to take that form just in order to be able to see the wonderful Rasleela, etc. of Krishna. But he undertakes this role of protecting the Dham. So typically devotees, especially in Lord Chaitanya's tradition, they will first of all go to this temple and offer respect to Gopeshwar Mahadev and ask him to lift this curtain of Yogamaya which covers the Dham. And or Mahamaya for us. It's one energy, it's described as one energy. Krishna's energy is one, but it manifests differently to different persons. And so in a sense, the terminologies are again switchable because they can switch. The reality can switch according to the mercy of a personality like Lord Shiva and our consciousness. So what starts off as Mahamaya can be altered to Yogamaya, which is then the pervading, supporting, facilitating energy for Krishna's pastimes. So that's something we do, that when we beg to Lord Shiva to remove this covering of the Dham, even though externally our bodies, our senses may be in the perceivable Dham, what's going on up there in the consciousness is, and in the heart is, different thing. And the perception is something else. So Lord Shiva does that. It's a very kind service. It's very, very special, because without that, we are simply stuck with the noise, everything else, all the things that distract us. Maybe some of the things that we go there to be distracted by. It is an interesting testament to the success of Srila Prabhupada's preaching that large numbers of people are attracted to holy places. Isn't it? In the past, not so many people would go to holy places. It would really be the those who are actively looking for spiritual growth. When the Goswamis were visiting Vrindavan, it wasn't a case of, I'll go to Vrindavan and I'll stay in the luxury accommodation and I'll be taken around and this and that. It was, put a straw between the teeth and go to Vrindavan and live like a mendicant. That was the attractive principle of Vrindavan and indeed any holy place. Now, of course, it is a testament to success of Prabhupada's preaching that vast numbers of people want to go to a place like Vrindavan. And particularly, a lot of this has been driven by the large Delhi businessmen who go to Vrindavan. That's become a whole industry in itself, which is amazing. It's amazing that through preaching, through the glorification of Krishna, Krishna's abode becomes so famous that everyone wants to go there. And that's very nice. Everyone should go to see the places of Vrindavan. Of course, it means that when people go en masse to places of pilgrimage, and the people going en masse aren't those who have adopted the life of a mendicant or adopted the idea of an exclusive spiritual seeker, it means so many other things will tend to pop up in those places, just to facilitate others. So Prabhupada also had a wide scope, a wide vision. He specifically created arrangements, facilities in Mayapur, Vrindavan, so that people from the West would be able to go and would be able to stay in a certain standard of comfort, so that their journey, their yatra would not be overly disturbed. And it's one of these interesting contradictions, an interesting mood of trying to bring as many people as possible, but somehow accepting the risk that one of the side effects of that is that perhaps the external visible mood of the place. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. That the visible mood of the place may change or may be more and more covered. So it's one of the risks of spiritual life. And one of the risks that any sincere person following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya or Srila Prabhupada may have to take at some point. Do we potentially compromise this for the sake of a wider preaching result? And that is a topic for much consideration, careful consideration. Certainly economics should not drive such decisions. They should be driven based upon is Lord Chaitanya's preaching mission enhanced by this? That should be the driving factor. So these personalities are there who protect the Dham. We're protected by Lord Shiva. We're protected by the devotees, the sincere practitioners who still imbibe the mood of the Goswamis, who live in the Dham, and they are still there. We just have to find them. They are there in different places. And then devotees who lead yatras, they will go to these places. They will also demonstrate by their behavior how one conducts oneself in the Dham. What do we do? Where do we go? Is it a shopping trip? Is it a pizza eating contest? is it a nice tour? Or is it some of those things plus a deep meditation and absorption in Krishna? And that's why we need someone to guide us. That's why we need someone to guide us on yatra itself. It's becoming more and more important. Now, of course, the whole yatra scene has been dealt a big blow by this virus. It's an interesting development. Traveling has been much restricted. Maybe it will once again revert to the mendicant traveling on their own feet to the holy place, because the holy place will no longer have so many vast industries which cater for sense gratification of the vast numbers of visitors who come, because the vast numbers of visitors may have decreased. We don't know how Krishna's plan works. And of course, nothing that I've described could happen at all. Things could just go on en masse and increase and expand. Krishna has his plan. We don't know. But it's interesting. It's always interesting to see how the world evolves, how the world changes. So places of pilgrimage are there, and people go there with a certain mood. And so we have Vrindavan. And these persons, these two brahmanas, are visiting all these pastime places. Yamuna, Keshighat, Kaliaghat. We're singing about these every day now as we're offering this wonderful Julan Yatra festival to the Lord. We're speaking of some of the important deities there, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan. And these three deities, actually, as specifically mentioned in this song, they are actually considered, at least for practitioners, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, perhaps the three most important deities in Vrindavan. We know there are seven primary principal temples in Vrindavan, established by the Goswamis, the followers. But then in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are these three particular deities which are mentioned, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Madan Mohan. And not in that order, but they represent, or they were founded by Srila Sanatana Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. And devotees approach them, actually as an order recommended, so that one can actually make progress and advance. The Madan Mohan deity was established by Sanatana Goswami. And it is the sort of the guardian of the Sambandha principle. Madan Mohan is that person who attracts our senses. He attracts everyone's senses. He's the transcendental Cupid who can divert our senses to him away from other objects of this world. So that is the first, it is the first port of call, really, in the recommended in the sequence. That one goes there, one's attention is attracted to the Lord, diverted away from any sense gratificatory ideas, not just visible objects, but ideas, concepts, ethoses, maybe driving motivations, and centered and attracted towards Madan Mohan. And then, of course, one moves on next to the Govinda deity. And I mention Govinda deity because it's covered in the next verse. The next verse mentions that they then went to, in this verse, the Panchakroshi Vrindavan town has been mentioned. And it says, in the village of Panchakroshi Vrindavan, at the site where the Govinda temple is now situated, there was a temple where the great gorgeous worship of Gopal was performed. So this Govinda temple is interesting. is where it's currently located, Panchakroshi Vrindavan. Now, where Vrindavan town is, as Prabhupada gave us a little map earlier, he said there's Vrindavan town, which we know is a bit like a peninsula, because it's surrounded, the Yamuna snakes around Vrindavan. So on almost three sides, Vrindavan is surrounded by the Yamuna. And so from there, he mentions up to Nandagaon and where else? Varshana. Yeah. Oh, I can't find it. Yes, Prabhupada mentions here, it extends all the way from the town of Vrindavan up to Nandagram and Varshana, a distance of 32 miles. And within that area is this place, Panchakroshi Vrindavan. And so we understand from the next verse that the place where this town is, Panchakroshi Vrindavan, is the place where Govinda currently is, where the Govinda Dev temple is. And so this Govinda Dev temple is established by Rupa Goswami. And this deity is the guardian of the Abhideya principle. So Abhideya means practice. In the Mother Mohan temple, the Sambandha is established. Our relationship with the Lord, our connection with the Lord as opposed to the objects of the senses, our connection with the Lord as a servant, as a spirit soul, an infinitesimal spark, a spirit soul who is meant to serve the Supreme Whole. That is Sambandha, understanding our identity, understanding the fundamental situation. But at that point, there is information and there is understanding. But the Abhideya principle involves the actual engagement of service. So it's very special. There's the actual acceptance of service from Govindaji. And that acceptance is, of course, the Abhideya principle, the principle of practice, engaging in our spiritual practices, engaging in our commitment to the Lord, engaging in our sadhana, different practices that we do, engaging in hearing and studying about the saintly devotees of the past and present, understanding the Lord. And actually understanding not so much the facts, because that's more of the Sambandha principle, but understanding the techniques of devotional service. And it is for this purpose that books like The Nectar of Devotion were written, because they are manuals of devotion. How you engage in service, what do you actually do? Service is nice. We mentioned one aspect of service, Pada Sevanam. But there's so much more detail that's there on a solid foundational basis. And so we have 64 items of devotional service described in the Nectar of Devotion. Different things that one can do to please the Lord. Five important types of devotional service. Five most potent forms of devotional service. Residing in Mathura is one of those. Residing in a holy place. Visiting the holy dham. And so that's very important that that's the stage of actual engagement. Someone can hear about philosophical principles for some time. Maybe, I mean, some people stay on that level during their lives. Jnanis and others, you know, they may have a great attraction to Krishna and to Krishna's service even. But they may, the platform they will remain at is one of just hearing about the Lord, one of understanding the Lord, understanding philosophy about ourselves, the position of the Lord. In Mahaprabhu's movement, there is this very important aspect of service, the actual rendering of service to the Lord, the actual rendering of service to the deity. And so when we encounter Prabhupada's translations of bhakti, Prabhupada has done something which is quite unique. He combined devotion with service. So this term was essentially coined by Prabhupada, devotional service. Because bhakti often was understood, or is often still understood, as a sentiment, as a mood, as a state of mind. And it definitely is that also. But there is this special quality, this special aspect of service, which means the rendering of service to the Lord with the example of the authorized acharyas. So the Govinda deity is the guardian of that. Then of course we have Lord Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis, who represents the Prayojan principle, the goal, the highest, the relishing of the highest engagement, the highest interaction of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna and their gopis. And we speak of, we discuss their pastimes, the pastimes under the Keshi Ghat, the pastimes at Keshi Ghat, the pastimes in all the different forests that are mentioned. These 12 forests that are visited by these two persons are all very special. As I was mentioning, some of the names are, they mean greater or lesser things depending on the context in which it is spoken. For example, the forest of Mahavan includes Gokul. Well, often we refer to the whole of Vrindavan as Gokul. But Gokul is specifically the place where Krishna was up to, say, perhaps the first three and a half years, I believe is the figure of his stay. But then at that point, too many demons started to cause harassment. And therefore, Upananda and the others, they made this, they had a committee meeting, an Ishtagoshti, and they decided to move. They all came together and they said, this Kamsa, he keeps sending all these demons. And already Krishna has had to deal with the whirlwind demon, he's had to deal with Putana, he's had to deal with the cart demon. So many things going on. So they all decide to move. And then they moved to Vrindavan. Because they say, oh, Govardhan is nearby, Yamuna is there, it's an ideal place. There'll be place to graze the cows. So each one of these forests, some of which have completely disappeared today, but at least these forests which were there to some extent in Lord Chaitanya's time, they're each places of treasured pastimes of the Lord. As Prabhupada mentions, there are 12 forests. 7 on the western side, the Yamuna sort of snakes in a certain direction. You've got the eastern side and the eastern, depending on which way you look, to my east, my right, and the west, the left. So the 7 forests on the western side, it is described, those are under the patronage of Lord Krishna, where Krishna performs all his pastimes. And the 5 forests on the eastern side, they are under the patronage of Lord Balaram. So we have so many pastimes of Balaram also described in Krishna book, Duvida Gorilla, Pralambasura and others. And so Balaram specifically has these forests which he's in charge of. And so each of these forests, different things happen in those forests, different arrangements, different pastimes. We know all the pastimes from the 10th canto from Krishna book, all the wonderful mischievous activities that Krishna gets up to with his gopi friends, with his gopa friends, with his elderly folk, with his parents, others, and so many others who just come to serve him. All the different rasas. And they're all found in these different forests. And so in Lord Chaitanya's time, the brahmanas went to these different forests. They would go to these places, engage with great happiness. It says, finally with great pleasure they came to Mathura. Mathura town, of course, the place where the prison house is. Now today, that place itself has been knocked down and rebuilt multiple times. It has a whole colorful history as well, with the Muslims and the Hindus fighting and smashing each other's temples down and reconstructing and this and that. So that all goes on. It seems to be a trait of Vrindavan that this thing has also gone on extensively. We were talking about these temples, the Radha Govinda temple, the Gopinath temple, the Madan Mohan temple. Some of those were spared when this great tyrant Aurangzeb was there, but some weren't. And Rupa Goswami's temple, this Govindaji temple, this personality, of course, this was built 100 years during Rupa Goswami's time. Manmohan Singh from Jaipur built this temple. He was, after the deity was discovered, this magnificent temple was built, 7 stories high, and with a bell on top, and they would have this massive ghee lamp, which was burning all the time. And so that's what happened. Now, 100 years later, this Aurangzeb, this tyrant, this Muslim ruler, could see from his fort, he could see this temple. And he heard this noise and saw this and he said, what is going on over there? And he said that this is the magnificent temple of Rupa Goswami. And they light this lamp there and everyone comes for aarti and bell rings. He said, no structure should be more prominent or bigger than mine. So knock it down. So he sent his soldiers. And now the devotees had some warning of this, so they took the deities away. Because there wasn't much you could do against a rampaging army of soldiers with powerful weapons. Vrindavan is not a place of great grandeur, valor. You know, Vrindavan is a place of simple things, and that's one of its sweetness and attractive principles. When Krishna is in Vrindavan, it is not like being in Dwarka. It's not like being in another place where he's surrounded by formidable armies. There are beautiful symbols. Vrindadevi's there. There are forests. There are cowherd boys, cowherd girls. Not particularly aggressive or terrifying things. Simple life. Cows, calves. So devotees also have that mentality. So when this tyrant sent his soldiers to smash down the temple, yes, they started doing that. They managed to pull down three stories of this temple. So today, if you go, the top three stories have been destroyed. This was a very exquisite temple, actually. There was a magnificent lotus in the temple entrance, in the hallway, suspended. It had beautiful features. It was a very, very attractive place. But they smashed all of these things. They went there, they desecrated the place, they damaged the deities, smashed them. They destroyed places, they basically contaminated the place. And they were pulling down the temple. They took down three floors of this temple, the Govindaji temple. But then the ground started to shake. So Krishna said, okay, you've had your thing now, that's it, enough now. The ground started to shake. They got scared and they ran away and they didn't come back. And so therefore today when you go, you'll see top stories are missing, but there's still something there. Now of course the whole place is kind of considered, it's been desecrated, it's considered contaminated. So worship cannot be performed there anymore. So they perform worship of deities now in a little temple at the back, behind that original one. So it seems to be a trait that demons attack, and Vrindavan, Mathura, these are all places where interesting things have always happened. You have this odd combination in Vrindavan, you have this great sweetness, great pastimes, but demons are always attacking. Then in Mahaprabhu's time, you have the Goswamis who are tasked with the important activity of rejuvenating these holy places. And so they do so much, uncovering the kuns, teaching people about the philosophy, writing books, establishing temples. But then as time passes, these things are also destroyed. The kuns get contaminated, they get covered, the temples get destroyed, worship changes, people leave, the onslaught of material energy comes. But underneath it all, if one has the vision, Vrindavan, the holy place, is still there. It's still there, just as much as it was in Lord Chaitanya's time, just covered with a different covering. Then the covering would be overgrown trees, bushes, maybe a hut, maybe this, that. Now the covering is concrete, asphalt, other enterprises. That's the covering today. Still, in one sense, they're both the same. They're both the same. Because underneath it, one still needs to get underneath that layer of covering in order to uncover the Lord. And that's really no different in one sense today than it was in the past. So that is why we need the mercy of these great personalities. Lord Shiva, we need the mercy of the devotees who take us on pilgrimage around these holy places. And we also need the mercy of Krishna himself. If we follow this process, to understand Vrindavan, we have to have overcome the attraction of the senses. We can't really enter the Vrindavan spirit without overcoming the attraction of the senses. And that's not something to practice once you're over there in Vrindavan, that's something to practice here. The senses are fully active here. They're like serpents, voracious, just demanding satisfaction. If we don't do it here right now, what is the point of pretending that we'll go to Vrindavan or Mayapur and we will somehow do it there? The senses are going to be just as voracious over there. Of course, the holy dham does infuse special potency. So I don't know anyone who has been to Mayapur, etc., and finds that their spiritual practice is much improved. I think that's a universal observation, that Mahaprabhu, his dham, gives a special boost. But still it's all there in the consciousness. Still all the tendencies of the senses to want sense objects is still there. It's just that they tend to be somewhat subdued in the holy dham. That's a special feature that Krishna just supplies just to help us. But really the time to practice it is now. This is also a holy dham. Thankfully we don't have the marauding invaders ripping down the temple structure and the deities. But we might have our marauding senses doing the same. There's no limit to that. They can be doing that. We can be here right in front of their lordships. And what's going on in our consciousness, in our heart, is something else. And if not now, at this moment, it could happen later. So that's the danger. They're like vicious serpents. That unless they are fully engaged, in the service of the Lord, they will sooner or later revert to their natural tendencies. They will start going for the objects they may have given up temporarily. So the idle mind is the devil's workshop, the famous saying. So if every moment isn't somehow connected to Krishna, not necessarily that we're running around in full mode of passion every moment, but at least every moment of consciousness, every moment of motivation, if at least you can't do stuff for Krishna directly, then at least be thinking of the concept of doing something for Krishna. At least do that. Sometimes what we can actually do is very much limited by so many factors. But at least the desire to do something for Krishna, to render him service, to please him, that could and should always be a constant theme in our minds. And so this is why these brahmanas would go on pilgrimage. It was standard activity for brahmanas. Hopefully now that we can embark on many virtual pilgrimages. You can look at the many nice videos different devotees have done. Go on pilgrimage, see the places, understand the behavior of the persons there. Understand what Lord Chaitanya did when he went there, how he interacted. Lord Chaitanya had some wonderful pastimes, especially in places like Imlital and others, where Radha Krishna merged into that form some all those years ago. So, very special, secret pastime places in Vrindavan, which require a special mood to enter into. They're so confidential, actually. It's amazing that we have access to have seen them or to have been there at some point. It's a rare privilege. So here we get this interesting example. Pilgrimage in Lord Chaitanya's time and then pilgrimage in today's time. So this is the Sakshi Gopal story. And as Prabhupada mentioned, I think, in the previous verse, this Sakshi Gopal deity also traveled a lot. Traveled from Vrindavan to Vidyanagar, then ended up in Katak, following another intrigue of another king invading another. And then it's been moved since then. The deity was in Jagannath temple for some time. And now it's in some place called Satyavadi, a little distance away from the Jagannath temple. So this is one deity who's traveled a lot. Not only the original travels, but a few travels subsequent to that, based upon a king. And there's many intriguing things which always go on with kings. One king wanted to marry the daughter of another ruler, another king, and he didn't agree. And so anyway, he invaded, and he got not only the girl, but also the kingdom. And then Gopal moved to another place. It's all pastimes. Interesting how Krishna uses different phenomena in this world to enact his pastimes. How he travels by the will of his devotees. Ultimately, it's only the devotees that can move the Lord. The demons can't. They might try. The Lord only moves if the devotees agree to have him moved. So I'll stop there. We're just at the start of this pastime. And after the whole Janmashtami celebrations, I think we will continue with that. So any comments, any corrections? Yes, Saras Prabhu.
So, you know, you talk about the seven forests of Krishna performed pastimes, and another five forests of Lord Balaram's.
Yes, they're the sort of the guardian. They're sort of the head of those forests, they're both in both forests.
Okay, but these forests, are they total disappeared? Have they total disappeared?
Most have, yeah.
And what is in place of what is there in that in place?
Oh, there's people. There's normal life going on.
Like so modern construction and houses and things.
Modern construction, houses, but also they're all devotees.
Okay.
We should never look at the dham and consider that just because there's something modern there, that these people are anything less than special. We should never do that, because Krishna allows one residence in his dham because they have pleased him in some way. Yeah. And we just have to be careful as practitioners at a neophyte stage how we interact with such people. But we should never see them as anything less than worshipable members of Krishna's entourage.
Yes.
Okay. Whatever they actually do.
Yeah. And that answered the question, because I was thinking in terms of if it's commercial, your commercial things going on there instead of the forest being there, and then that would be like such a sacrilege, you know. But the fact that if it's devotees actually occupied, then that makes a little bit different.
Yes, it's good for us to see everyone as devotees. It's good for us to see anyone in Krishna's holy land as a devotee. But we are warned that we should not necessarily imitate their behavior, and the association we take also should be very carefully controlled. When we go to these holy places, Prabhupada on occasions was dissatisfied when devotees went off to listen to this person speaking or that person speaking or this person speaking. It's not the case that everyone speaking just because they're in Vrindavan has the correct mood of being Rupanugas, being followers of the Goswamis, being persons who have adopted the mood and sentiment and lifestyle of a sadhaka. Some may be on a rasic platform, some may be, I mean, the best rasic bhakta is Lord Chaitanya, so, but I mean, more sahajya, not rasic. Rasic is a genuine thing. But sahajya, where someone acts in a certain way, on a level way beyond their own actual status. That tends to pervade holy places also, because many such people go there, thinking it will supply them a good environment within which to enact their fantasies. So when we go there, there may be some people like that also. So we can keep our distance from them. And better we go and follow the recommendations of the guides. As I mentioned, that's why the guides are important. The Goswamis, who did they go to see? Where did they go? When Prabhupada went, where did he say his disciples should go? Where did he say his disciples should not go? So that's always there. But we should always remember that even the monkeys, the trees, the pigs, they're very special in Vrindavan. Monkeys and pigs especially. Prabhupada says they suffer tremendously. And if you watch them, they do suffer. It's constant suffering. And but the thing is, that's their last life of suffering. In Vrindavan, they go there, they stay in that holy place, they suffer, they burn off the remaining tinges of lust or whatever it was that accompanied them in their previous lives, and then they continue their pastimes with Krishna. So every tree, every creeper, every animal, every insect, every bird is something special. So we've got to be very careful. Just as sadhakas, we also have a very clear line to follow. And that's Mahaprabhu's basis, that anything and everything doesn't go. You have to be careful who you take association from. Rupa Goswami speaks so much about this. Nectar of Instruction was composed. Things to avoid, association to avoid, association to look for. So we can't be naive about this. Our spiritual progress cannot happen if we take association from the wrong places. So we have to work on that. But there are many projects. You're talking about the forests. Yes, there are projects to rejuvenate some of the forests, to bring back some of the original splendor. It's nice. It's nice services that one can do in the Dham to try to do essentially what Lord Chaitanya asked his Goswamis to do, uncover the holy places. It's nice. But we should also just be realistic that this material world is like that. You can have a magnificent temple like Govindaji's, and it can be completely desecrated 100 years later. You can beautify a place, and someone can come in 10 years' time and just completely destroy it. So don't get too proud. Don't get too proud about doing anything with matter in this material world. Don't make it a sign of great achievement. In the Bhagavatam, this point is made very clearly to Parikshit Maharaj as he's leaving, about to leave this world. A whole list of kings and their achievements is presented to him. And at the end of it, Shukadev Goswami says, don't worry about it too much. All of these kings are gone. Their achievements are gone. All that's left of them is a list of names. So you can try. You can try and do this, that. You can do a massive campaign. Take it within the correct perspective. The only task, the only campaign we actually need to do here that will last is the campaign of devotional service. It's a campaign of uncovering our attraction to sense gratification. And so many services that are performed in line with that also come onto the eternal platform. So that can also include the services rendered in the Dham. Definitely, they're all on the eternal platform. Just the actual physical result of your service may disappear easily. That's something to be realistic about. Any other questions, comments? So anyway, please bless me that one day I'll be able to actually go to Vrindavan and have darshan as of the real Vrindavan, as not the real Vrindavan yet. I've taken a plane there and I've stayed in one of. I've done that. I've gone along the Yamuna Expressway. I've been to the Yamuna. I've done all of that, but I'm really still looking for the underlying Vrindavan, the mood, you know, that sweet mood that pervades one's connection with Krishna. So please bless me that one day that may happen in the footsteps of these two brahmanas. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Sri Vrindavan Dhama ki.